You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Visit GameSenseAB.ca to find out more. We had Demers on the show, and he just says, hey, man, it's an out-of-sight, out-of-mind league. He just wanted an opportunity to get back in and show that, in his words, maybe he's got a little bit of magic left. What do you think the chances of him or Vertanen earning an NHL contract?
I like, you know, the honesty from Demers, and you know, reading Daniel Nugent-Bowman's story in The Athletic, you get a sense of the guy. And hearing from people that dealt with him on other teams, they say he's a glue guy. So I like the demeanor. I like the attitude. But, Greger, for those suggesting that this makes Tyson Barrie all of a sudden trade bait right away, I would say no, hold your horses on that. Good. Let's see if he gets a shot here and he can show well and show that he's still a capable hockey player. But I don't think he has a great chance of cracking the roster, but weirder things have happened. As for Jake Virtanen, I know that it's been a lightning rod of controversy. You know, I've seen the backlash on social media. This guy hasn't made the team. It's a tryout. He's going to get a shot here. So, you know, again, don't jump to conclusions just yet. If he doesn't come in and perform well or play well, he's not going to get a contract either. You know, and I think Sonny Milano going to the Flames also pushed Virtanen to come to Edmonton because I think the Flames were probably his number one choice for a PTO. Let's see what happens, Gregs. We have training camp starting out in a couple of days here, and if one of those guys plays well, then they might get an extended look. If neither one of them really does anything to move the needle, then, you know, thanks for coming out. Here's your plane ticket home. See you later kind of thing.
There was some that was, you know, they don't understand why the Oilers wouldn't try to get Sonny Milano rather than Jake Virtanen. Do you think that maybe there's some conversation about what a contract would look like? Would Sonny Milano demand or not demand, but would his salary be higher than the $750 I'm guessing Jake Virtanen gets?
Strutty, yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair because Milano, you know, has some clout in the league recently too, whereas Jake Virtanen does not. And you know, another thing too with these two players is Sonny Milano, kind of the knock on him or people like to talk about him and say he's not necessarily a guy that plays with a physical edge. Virtanen, you know, can do that. He did that early in his career, and he likes to play a power forward style. I think the Oilers would like someone with a little bit more gusto in that regard. To help them play a little bit bigger. Again, he has to play really well to even get a shot at a contract, and we'll see if that happens. But it could be that, yeah, if Milano does prove well in training camp, he commands more than bottom dollar. And whereas Virtanen comes in, and the most he can expect, if he ever does get another contract at this point, would probably be bottom dollar. So that does factor into it, among other things.
Tom Gazzola joins him, the sports leader, TSN 1260. And the Elks, a huge win on the road. They're 4-4. Oh, it was an up and down, back and forth game, and they got final possession and made it happen. And, you know, theoretically, I know they have a chance for the crossover, but no, Chris Jones had a really good analogy about the coals in the morning, and then you come out, people think the fire's out, but all you need is a little lighter fuel, and boom, it comes right back. They got a bye week, and then they take on Montreal. Like, until the Elks can win a game at home, especially when three of their final four games are at home, it's obviously not going to matter. But what did you make of their win in Saskatchewan? And specifically the amount of pressure they got with basically a three-man rush.
Oh, they rushed three men the entire time. I mean, the Riders' O-line, we knew they were an issue, and Eddie Steele was talking about the O-line pass protection. Well, I mean, the Elks going three, sometimes four guys, got to Cody Fajardo. It took away his time, collapsed the pocket. That was nice to see, and you know, Chris Jones going back to Regina, spoiling their lights-out game. And Taylor Cornelius making some big plays. Kevin Brown again looking sharp. You know, Cornelius played with a little bit of that fresh contract swagger, and I think that probably helped with confidence, and he looked good. And so I was watching that game pleasantly surprised with their overall performance. I mean, they did a decent job of limiting mistakes, and they took advantage of the opportunities they were able to create. They took advantage of the opportunities the Riders provided to them as well. So that's a good win at a time when, you know, people were down on the team after those tough games against the Calgary Stampeders, where they were humbled at home and, you know, put up a decent fight at McMahon. But boys, that's a good shot in the arm for the Double E, and you know, they'll rest up, and when they get back on the turf, let's see if they can continue the hot hand. I say that somewhat facetiously, but they did win, and let's see if they can carry some confidence into a home win at some point, because that's one thing that needs to end, is this home losing streak, because it's gone on far too long for this club.
When you look at it, do you feel like the team is moving in the right direction as far as some solutions to some positions?
Strutty, a couple things in the last few weeks have kind of popped up. Kevin Brown, like I mentioned before, he's been good. Cornelius gets that contract. That's nice. And the plays he made the other day, I think that's good. So at least you know you have someone who looks like he's learning the CFL game, getting a little bit of swagger, and who knows what will happen at quarterback next season if they decide ultimately they want to bring in someone else and make it a competition. I really like Dylan Mitchell. I think that's good. It's nice to see a little bit of Darrell Walker finding his old form. Mm. And so, you know, old reliable Darrell Walker at certain times in the last few weeks, and that's a nice thing to see. And we've kind of given the defense a hard time at times, and good to see it come up. The D-line was solid. They, you know, the secondary made some good plays. So overall, that's a little bit of a boost. And consistency in the roster, Struds, something we have not had a chance to really talk about with this Edmonton Elks football team. So let's see who gets into the game next or 2 weeks from now, and let's see if they could build off of a big win in Regina.
Tommy, I want to get your thoughts on the comeback of your Arizona Cardinals.
Boys, oh my goodness. What a Jekyll and Hyde. First and second half. I mean, the Cardinals look terrible in the first half. And Oakland was just owning them. Vegas was just owning them. And I'm like, Kyler Murray does not look like a $40 million a year quarterback. It was so bad. And then in the second half, it was all Kyler Murray. He went all Madden on that one, boys. And that sequence at the end, the two-point conversions, oh, my goodness. Murray ran 85 yards for that one two-point conversion. It was a play that took 20 seconds. And the magic is back, baby. So I think that'll help give that team a little bit of swagger going into week three against the Rams, which is going to be another tough game. But whew, and then Kyler Murray gets smacked in the face from a fan after the game, going to celebrate with Cards fans. And someone gives him a whack in the face. And now the police are looking for him in Vegas. And they'll see if they can find this guy and charge him. And Cliff Kingsbury, who I don't have a ton of faith in, knows that I hope that guy gets charged and never sees another football game again in person. That was a crazy, crazy finish. I know it wasn't as crazy as what was the Cleveland game, but I'll take it, baby.
Well, it was crazy, man. The Cleveland game, the Miami-Baltimore game, it was definitely, after some sloppy games in week one, it was definitely some more entertaining games in week two. Now, the orders, we talked about, the PTOs. Dylan Holloway doing what he should be doing, I think, at this rookie prospects tournament. He's definitely stood out as the best forward. I don't think there's any debate about that. People saying he's the best player in the tournament. So, you know, that's great. He'll come to main camp very confident. Could Dylan Holloway be a surprise, or do you think they're just going to slow play it and he ultimately will start in the minors?
Yeah, and power move shorthanded on that goal. I'm watching this game right now, and kudos to Reed Schaefer, who had the other goal for the Oilers rookies. A shot from distance, boys, we know that's kind of part of his MO. But with Holloway, when you look at him and Philip Broberg, you know, that's the other young up-and-comer that you know, we're hearing the Oilers organization say he's going to be on the team. With Holloway, I don't think it's necessarily the Oilers looking and penciling him on the roster right away. He's going to get a long look. He's going to get a lot of opportunity in the preseason. Granted, he stays healthy, knock on wood for Oiler fans. But I don't think that they're saying we need Dylan Holloway on the roster this season right out of the gates. So I think he's got more of an outside chance of making the team as opposed to Broberg, who's got the inside chance of making this team. But if Holloway earns a spot by playing well in camp, guys, I mean, they're already going to be watching him with a keen eye. So I think if he plays really well, shows good defensively, especially later in training camp and preseason, then he might crack the opening day roster. But I don't necessarily think he's got the inside track to a job, really.
But I think the point I'd love to get your thoughts, I believe that the advantage he has is he has the body and the speed that he can fit in on different lines. I don't think he's just a skilled player or just a bottom six. He can work his way in and be effective. And I'm not pigeonholing him as a fourth line left winger, but
right.
He could start there and be effective and then work his way up. You know, and I think that, like, I don't know that other guys, like, no disrespect, I don't think Carr Savoy is that guy. You can't put him on the fourth line to be successful. I think Holloway, my vision of him is he could start there and then work his way up. So I agree. I think he starts in the minors, but I think that's the advantage he has. And you know, a lot of young players don't think that way.
Well, and maybe that helps him, or maybe he has rounded out his game study, that if it's a case where it's like, hey, like, you played really well, but we could put you into the bottom six to try it out to start. And if he adds elements to his game, or he sharpens up certain elements of his game, whether it be defensively, I don't necessarily think he's a PK type of guy, but if he can go in and he could give them solid minutes and find ways to tilt the ice and keep the puck in the offensive zone, be sound on the boards in his own zone, and just, you know, refine some of the skills, then okay, yeah, sure. But I personally wouldn't think it would be beneficial for him to play, you know, 7 to 9 minutes a night on the fourth line. I think you've got a lot of capable guys that have been around the league that's basically what they've become as hockey players that can do that, while Holloway could go back down. And if you're an Oilers fan thinking, hey, go back to the AHL and just crush it. Go and score goals, play physical, muck it up, round out your game down there as well. And then in time, you know, whether it's, you know, a quarter of the way through the season, halfway through the season, three quarters of the way through the year, if he's just doing fantastic in the AHL, he'll probably be one of the first call-ups. And then he might not look back after that.
100%. You know what? There is no rush. I really believe that Dylan Holloway, biggest impact on the team this year, if there is one, will occur in the second half, even if he's here in the first half. So we'll see where that goes. Tommy, enjoy the double dip on Monday Nighter. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, boys.